Hello and welcome back to the Fantasy Ramble by Energy Sport, the finest student-run fantasy football podcast in the country. My name is Jack Donnelly and we are here to bring you more insightful FPL tips for this weekend's batch of fixtures. As always, our league is still joinable on the official Premier League website. We're aiming for 50 members before the end of the season, so be sure to join with the code DPPRDJ. Also, be sure to follow us over on Twitter at Fantasy Ramble to see our host predictions for the full set of Premier League fixtures this weekend. Three of the finest of Energy Sports football writers with me today, as always, because we're all unbelievable. Starting with Mr. Struan Garvey, who's a bit down in the dumps because he's just been... Game have teased him today, haven't they? Now, explain your situation.
So yesterday I must have spent about an hour and a half to 2 hours in the queue at Game to obtain a PlayStation 5. I unfortunately missed out with about 10 minutes left on my queue. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, other members of this podcast were able to secure one. And then once again today... Game opened up the queue. I sat in it for about an hour and it went down to 3 minutes and I was once again missed out due to no stock. So, yeah, not the best, but I'm wearing a Christmas jumper today. I'm feeling festive. You know, my day was going quite well until they tempted me in again.
You usually join this and it's like, oh, happy it's a Friday. But like, it doesn't seem like it's the same sort of situation this week.
It doesn't feel like a Friday.
No, it doesn't. You're right.
But it will.
You mentioned that our other members of this podcast managed to get one. I was one of them. Managed to secure myself a little PlayStation 5. Taylor Murray did the same. How does it feel, my man?
Yes! That's all I'm saying. Yes. That's my introduction. That's my full podcast contribution. Nice having you on, and I'll see you later.
All right, cool. I just left the call. Good, now we can talk shit about him. That's fun.
I'm still here.
Okay. Well, I'll finally round out today's panel. We've got Mr. Graham Sinclair. It's good to have you, mate. It's good. You've already had a PlayStation 5, so you've not got the same introduction to you that the other two had. But
No working controller, do, bro. So
yeah, that's a bit of a problem.
PS5, oh. I can't put the games on.
All week, games like that. Any spare PS5 controllers? Oh man, it's been class. But you know, good PS5 chat.
I really enjoy when people clap on an audio podcast. It really, really is great. I do that all the time. It's really good. It's really nice to hear clapping in an audio podcast.
I can continue going if you want.
Don't.
Okay.
To be fair, I can mute him. So if he does it again, either somebody was clapping, or we really don't need to have that in the podcast. Shocking. Right, we're going to get right into things with our first segment, which is Premium Picks. This is where we take a look more in-depth at the three biggest fixtures that we see of this Premier League batch. We're only dealing with a fixture list of nine this weekend after there's been a bit of a COVID outbreak at Newcastle's training centre, meaning that their game against Aston Villa that was due tonight on the day of recording, this is Friday, has been postponed to God knows when. So the deadline has been moved till tomorrow at 11 a.m. So if anyone was stressing about having time to get their teams in order, you've got until tomorrow morning, so relax. The first of the premium picks that we're going to be discussing, though, is the North London Derby. Sunday at 4:30 at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, Spurs versus Arsenal. Last results for both, it was a 0-0 draw for Mourinho Spurs away at Chelsea, while Arsenal suffered a home loss 2-1 to Wolves. Now, coming into this game, I'm seeing Mourinho. And he's had some really good performances the last couple of weeks. Doing really well against the kind of bigger opposition that he's had in City and Chelsea in the last two. Defensively, fantastic. I mean, they ran out 2-0 winners against City, just hit them on the counter. But they weren't as offensive, I want to say. They just did really sit in a lot deeper against Chelsea and didn't offer the same attacking output. Struan, are we expecting a similar approach in terms of a more heavier outlook on defence from Mourinho this week? Or are we expecting them to kind of push more in terms of attacking play against Arsenal?
I think they'll probably try and push more in this game. We've seen Arsenal have been a bit lethargic this season, and I think, although form does, you know, you'd say form goes out the window in this type of game, I think they will want to take advantage of just that man-for-man advantage. I think position for position is definitely in Tottenham's favour. And I think the Chelsea game kind of showed, you know, Mourinho was saying at the end of it that some of the players in the dressing room were quite annoyed. So I think that, to come away with the point from that game and possibly the play style coming into that as well. So I think that'll probably be on their minds that if they do have the opportunity, they will take it to go forward. Because I can't really see, just at the midfield alone, I can't really see Arsenal dominating the ball for the majority of this game. So I think the ball will be in Tottenham's court, so to speak.
It was an interesting statement, the fact that he came out and said, it's like, oh, my players were annoyed that they could only get a point. But the way I saw it, that they weren't attacking as much as Chelsea were.
But I think Mourinho will be buzzing with that, no matter what the players are saying.
To be fair, he is that type of character. Graham, we've spoken about them enough, but I mean, Spurs still do have two of the most informed players in the league in Heung-Min Son and Harry Kane. I mean, and Harry Kane's got a fantastic goal-scoring record against London clubs, so are we expecting him to provide a difference in this match?
If he plays, of course, I don't know if you saw that he has a doubt for this game. An unspecified injury that Mourinho brought up on Wednesday. He missed the game against Las Clans last night. Spurs drew 3-3, so it meant that they weren't struggling to score. But it becomes a whole lot harder to win if he doesn't play against Arsenal, because that's their main man.
I did miss that, to be honest. I missed that. I didn't even really concern myself with Europa League last night, to be honest, but that is quite interesting. I mean, we've been kind of talking about it for a couple of weeks now. It just kind of seems to happen every season that there's a Harry Kane injury. I mean, do we think it's going to be a bad one, or do you think that, or is it just
We think he's going to feature. Mourinho expects him to feature in this game, this massive game. But he did kind of just stress that yes, he is currently injured, so don't be surprised if he doesn't make it. Could be a tactical play. You know, Mourinho's like someone's fitness is struggling, and they turns up and they just team aren't expecting it. So that could be mind games.
And I mean, you said there that they've been not having trouble scoring, but it was Lask. But do you think Vicinius? I think that Carlos Vicinius up front with Son, Kane, and Son and Bale and Lucas. Do you think they'll still be able to provide Arsenal's defence with a lot of questions?
Not particularly, no. I think that Spurs showed last week that they aren't unbelievable attacking side. They play pragmatic, especially in the big games. And without Harry Kane, who was everything to them against Man City a couple of weeks ago, he needs to be everything to them in all the big games, and not having him, I think that'll be massive. I think that could actually sway the game.
I said it in our group chat, I think on form, Harry Kane's been the best player in the Premier League this season. I mean, we had a bit of a debate over who we thought it was. I mean, you chucked Kevin De Bruyne in the conversation, of course he would, because I think naturally he's the best player in the Premier League, but based on this season, I think it would you would have to say Harry Kane's probably been the best player so far anyway. I mean, this is game week 11, so we're only not even anywhere near halfway through, so time will still tell whether that's going to be the case at the end of the season. Taylor, we'll have a look at Arsenal quickly. I mean, their home record, which was already a bit dodgy this season, it was worsened by that Wolves result. I mean, is there a chance for them to pick up the result in this one? Do we see them posing a really resolute Spurs defence with any questions in this game?
I feel two reasons why I feel like we could probably see a different Arsenal side, although I'd still undecided about the result. One, the midweek performance, the fact is, it was probably good, the fact is they go back to win ways and in a convincing manner. 1-4-1 in the Europa League, although they'd already qualified, and I'm pretty sure they made like 11 changes, was it? Or it was a ridiculous amount of changes anyway, but it was they made 11 changes and still won convincingly, which was good, so that's good for the confidence. And they've got fans back in the stadium, so...
They do.
I feel like we have probably noticed, especially up here in Scotland, how much we have missed fans. And fans could come back and play their vital part. Although it's a limited number and it's not going to be like the place will be bouncing, it could give the players that extra motivation now that they're playing in front of the fans, and we could probably see Arteta's side perform something big. But I think this could be a good game, but in the same sense, it's Mourinho versus Arteta, which is two managers that have adapted their style of defending resolute and just trying to hit a counter. So it could be a good game, it could be the worst game of the weekend. That's the greatest insight I could probably give you.
I don't want to derail the chain from the insight that we're given, but I think you just brought up fans there. I don't know if any of you seen that after however many months, Charlton were able to welcome their fans back in, and at full time the team get booed off the pitch.
Oh no.
I think he was scared and put it on Twitter, and I just found it hilarious. Just after all that time, and fans will still come and boo their players even after that many months away. It's fantastic. Something else I wanted to bring up just about Arsenal, more specifically Arteta. I feel like we keep kind of working our way back around in this conversation. There were, I think it was an Italian media outlet, Stadio Sport, if I'm right, if the tweet was to be believed, that they're linking Maurizio Sarri to the Arsenal job, which is odd to me. I mean, things surely aren't that bad at Arsenal that Mikel Arteta is already being kind of looking, kind of they're looking at the Arsenal hierarchy, sorry, are looking elsewhere. for a manager. Like, surely things aren't that bad.
2 weeks ago, he was like being praised as one of the best up-and-coming young managers in the league, wasn't he?
The opinion changes every week. Like, and there's not one set opinion on Arteta, is there?
1 week, you know, he's the next Pep Guardiola, and then the next week is the next Tony Pulis. It's just, there's no sort of stable name for him, almost. It's a bit strange.
Nah, I can't see Arsenal getting rid of him. They've got a project. They can see working with Arteta. They've got someone that knows the club, someone that could probably put a long-term plan in. The fans are really buying into what Arteta's about. Maybe it's not happening right now, but I think this is just media talk. I don't see Arsenal getting rid of managers. They've seen, since Wenger went, getting rid of managers just isn't working. So,
I'm looking at one, to be fair.
Yeah, I'm saying that, but was I really the right appointment at the time? It was a change of direction from the club, but I can see them sticking with Arteta and giving him, I'm going to say, 2 full seasons, I could see.
I do agree that they're going to stick with Arteta, but it's like your point that it's like changing managers hasn't worked for them in the past. That was Arsene leaving off his own volition, and then, I mean, you couldn't argue that they were wanting to stick with Emery when he was genuinely just pushing the club into a pit, like an unassailable pit. That surely had to be the right decision, no?
No, I do agree that Unai Emery was probably, I wouldn't say it's the worst appointment, but it wasn't a good appointment for Arsenal, given the fact is he's just his style of playing and all that. I just don't feel it. I personally didn't feel like it fit Arsenal, but I can see it's Arteta and Arsenal. I see his style of playing and Arsenal working together. It's a good relationship. I just think he just needs time and give him a full chance to actually be able to, you know, get his ideas across, because they will take time, and probably maybe give him a chance to at least try in front of fans, because fans do play a massive part.
Graham,
I think it's interesting. I'm actually going to kind of bring up something Struan said. Struan kind of half jokingly brings up Mesut Ozil for Arsenal, like something as a key player.
Mm.
I think that's what Arsenal are missing. 100%. Whether it's Ozil or whether it's somebody new, I can't believe that Ozil's out the team for footballing reasons. There must be other reasons.
Mm-hmm.
He has made comments about China, which maybe play into that's a bit of a theory rather than a fact, so probably shouldn't put it on the podcast. But really, Arsenal just struggle with a creative midfielder. They don't have one. And that's the number one reason why they can't create chances in this team. And that's the number one reason why Mikel Arteta isn't playing exciting football. And that's why Arsenal have had the worst start to their season in Premier League history.
Yeah, no, I do completely agree. I think it's ludicrous that a man of Mesut Ozil's ability on a football pitch has just been completely frozen out of this team. And it's, I think it was, what did we title last episode? Hashtag Free Ozil.
Frozel.
I don't think I titled it that, because I couldn't bring myself to type Frozel into the anchor title bar, but no, it is, absolutely. I think it genuinely doesn't make sense to me. There has to be something else going on behind the scenes, because I can't understand why Arsenal would go out in January, spend 40, 50 million potentially on an attacking midfielder when they've got a man who, De Bruyne gets talked about for reaching 20 assists last season. Ozil hit 19 in his first season in the league.
And a much worse team, I would say, as well, than what Man City is.
Yeah, 100%. So
Ozil isn't the same player. He isn't a world-class player anymore.
He's not, no.
But as a replacement for what they have and for what they need to improve their team, he should absolutely be at least an option rather than being completely shunned out.
Yeah.
I was going to say another strange thing. I'm not 100% sure behind this, but in Emery's season, you know, they signed William Saliba from St Etienne and loaned him back because he was too young. And that team is definitely, other than Gabriel, I don't really think they've got an established right-sided centre-half. And I don't really understand. I know he's only 19 and playing for Arsenal is massive, but I'm not really sure as to why he's not getting a game either.
I don't know what that is. Because
I think that's a bit of an interesting one.
There was a press conference that Arteta did, and he made reference to that point, and he was saying that he's getting more and more frustrated about the fact that Saliba's not playing. And I'm like, you're the manager, just play him.
Yeah,
I don't know what's going on there. I think there might be some other people pulling strings and making decisions up behind Arsenal's closed doors, other than Arteta and his.
That's what I was about to say. Do we feel it could be higher up? So it's like taking control, not taking control, but making decisions like based on Ozil and who can play, who not can play. Because I wouldn't say it'd be out of the remit that could happen, as we know it's happened before. Did they have a director of football?
Is it Edu? Is he the director of football?
He was involved heavily at the club, and what's your director of football's actual role?
Yeah, Andrew Better Silva has a role as well, I'm sure.
I wouldn't say it's the most outlandish claim that could be other people making decisions, but I'm not going to say the fact that is happening. It could just be generally down to Arteta, but the press conferences and his comments would suggest that it's maybe out of his hands.
They do have a director of football. His name is Vinay Venkatesham. Venkatesham, technical director, Edu. So he's technical director, whatever that means. So, yeah, no, it generally is really strange. I think it just goes down to the fact whoever Stan Kroenke is playing in the FPL that weekend, whichever players he's got in his team, he will instruct Arteta to play, even if it does mean playing Aubameyang out in the wing when he should be playing through the centre, that old argument. So what are we reckoning for this game specifically, this iteration of the North London derby? Struan, can we get some predictions?
I've gone for 1-1. I think it could be quite a cagey game. I've picked Kieran Tierney as my man of the match, as he's in my fantasy team, and I hope he does well. But as we said, you know, on paper, I think Tottenham are the clear favourites, but you know, form completely goes out the window in these games, and there's going to be fans as well, which could play a massive part. But yeah, I'll go for a score draw.
Graham, how about yourself?
I'm expecting a poor game, which I think is a shame. I think the North London derby has always been one of the more exciting fixtures in the Premier League in recent years.
Yeah, I'd agree.
But I think that's now changed. I'm not expecting much from this game. I think it's two teams that play uninspiring stuff, especially Spurs in big games. Spurs in big games and Arsenal in every game. I think the key man for me is Eric Dier. His form's fantastic. We like to rip on Eric Dier, but he's having a fantastic start to the season. He's the most formed player on FPL other than Hugo Lloris of both teams, and he's only 4.9 million, so he's my key player and he's my player you pick up in your team.
That's an absolutely fantastic shout. Did we get a score prediction from you there? Sorry.
Who cares?
Who cares? Fair enough.
Now 1-0 Spurs.
1-0 to Spurs. I mean, would that change if Harry Kane definitely starts?
Probably maybe a goal in it. I'm a goal in it. I still think the Spurs win. But I said 1-0 based on the fact I think Harry Kane's going to play.
Right, okay. I'm with you there. Taylor, how about yourself? How do you see it going?
I was going to be agreeing with Struan, 1-1, but I feel fans could play a massive part in this. And
could they?
Yeah, no, I generally do think it is underrated.
2,000?
Explain to me how that's a thing, how fans make a difference.
Because you're more motivated playing in front of a crowd than you would be just playing in a completely empty stadium.
Do you notice 2,000 fans? I don't think
in a like 60,000 seat stadium. That's like not even a tenth of the allocation.
I think this is the first North London. Sorry.
You go, Struan. No,
I was just going to think this is the first North London derby in the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium that's actually going to have fans in it. I believe the only other one last season was with no fans, the one Tottenham won 2-1. So
I think you are motivated by great atmosphere created by lots of fans. I don't think with the rules in place and the low number of fans that's going to be a thing. I think players will be so focused on the game that they will barely notice there's fans around because they can't make much noise.
I was going to say, I can't imagine many chants I'll get going, you know, when the next person's like 10 metres away from you and you're trying to start something and you can barely hear the other people in the stadium.
In Scotland when they had fans and they had rules where you couldn't like be a normal fan, you had to just kind of sit there with a mask on and barely talk.
There were like noise rules and stuff, weren't there? Like, I think it was the test events that get done. Mm-hmm. I think when I watched, it was the pre-season friendly that Chelsea had with Brighton back in August or something like that. Yeah, there were fans in the Amex and it was a really weird atmosphere because it was just folks sitting watching. There really wasn't a lot of noise generated whatsoever. So,
I guess in pubs you can't play high music, so people, you know, have to talk louder over one another. So there's probably an element of that in it.
And I think as well, like people, like I think players, they've kind of gotten used to the fact that they've not been playing in front of fans, and they can kind of just focus on the game and not really have anything distract them from the outside. And I think they're still going to be heavily in that mindset that 2,000 folk, while it's still like a large number in terms of just figures, but compared to what they would usually have in a full Premier League stadium, it's minuscule. It's insignificant almost.
No, I agree with everyone's point, by the way. I can understand that, but I feel like these professional players, like most of them have played in front of stadiums and they've played in front of crowds, and these last couple of months have been very weird. So I feel like even though it's very insignificant, it would probably still make a big difference to the players, knowing the fact that there is fans there. They will take notice, and that could give them that extra motivation. Like, because football's a passionate sport. It's basically, they'll thrive off of people like probably even watching, knowing that they're doing well if they're up against the cosh. I know for the fact you say that they can't make noise. I doubt the fact that they're going to stay quiet, because even in the game at Charlton, there was still a lot of noise at. So I generally do believe Spurs could just edge this 2-1 because of that, even though I take everybody's points on board. It's not what atmosphere should be, or it usually is, but I think it will make a difference.
I mean, I think it will be a Spurs win, but I don't think it's going to be down to the fans. Because to be honest, obviously we were doing the TV news yesterday and we did a whole feature package on the fact that fans are returning in England. But I've genuinely forgotten about it. Because I'm not seeing it firsthand up here, I suppose. It's genuinely just in the back of my mind that fans are going to be there. And honestly, I don't think I was saying that they're genuinely going to sit, the fans are all going to sit in their seat, hands clasped and quiet as a church mouse. Obviously they're not going to be, it's a football game. But still, I just don't think it's going to be enough. To be fair, it could be the inverse completely. I mean, it could be Heung-Min Son goes to take a throw-in, and someone in the crowd, you can hear them more clearly because there's less of them going, "You're playing shit. You need to pass it up the line more often." So I don't know. It might have more access to it because there's not an overlapping wall of sound behind a specific insult that might get thrown at a player. So who knows? But personally, I don't think it's going to have too much of an impact. Nothing's really going to have much of an impact until you're at least half capacity for some of these grounds. So we'll just have to kind of wait for that day to come. Hopefully with this vaccine, we'll be able to get back to that sooner rather than later. I'm predicting a Spurs win. It'll differ depending on whether Harry Kane plays or not for me. 1-0 if Kane doesn't play, and 2-0 if he does. He's a key man in that, obviously, for me, but I think Pierre Hoivier is going to be the other key man if Kane doesn't play. He was fantastic against City specifically, and they still had a fairly decent game, just kind of trying to tidy stuff up against Chelsea. So,
is he the best Pierre in North London?
Are we battling for that?
Oh, Stuart.
Oh, you always come away with a comment that makes me consider what the title of this episode's going to be. Which I appreciate, because it's quite hard sometimes.
Yo, Pierre, you want to come over here?
No. Game two. What we're going to be discussing? We're going to be discussing Liverpool versus Wolves Sunday, 7:15 kickoff at Anfield. It was a 1-1 draw for Liverpool in fairly dramatic fashion against Brighton last week, whereas Wolves, we just mentioned, beat that Arsenal side 2-1 at the Emirates. Big FPL news coming out of this fixture is that Andy Robertson is a doubt after sustaining an injury versus Ajax. Was it? Remind me.
He hurt his ankle on Tuesday, yes.
Hurt his ankle, Ajax. Yes. Graham, is there any update with Robertson at the moment? Is there any indication that he will be playing this weekend, or is it still up in the air?
I would be surprised if he didn't battle through it, given the other defensive missing players Liverpool have. Unless Trent comes back, which is apparently they've given Trent a 75% chance of playing.
Right.
But most likely, Robertson will play through his injury, and then they'll give him a rest for the midweek game because they're already top of the group in the Champions League.
Yeah, right. I can see that. Talk about the rest of the team, Graham. Jota, a must start.
Yeah, I think this is the game of Diego Jota, pretty much. Of course, returning to his former side, Wolves, the team that kind of seemed happy to let him go. And he's been buying form. He is Liverpool's best form player in the league, FPL-wise, and just the eye test, bagging goals, and feels like every home game recently. And he's just been a revelation for the team at a time when Salah and Mane in particular, have been so off it. They cannot score, their touches seem off, they can't seem to connect with each other. So the signing of Jota and Jota's form has been crucial to keeping Liverpool at the top of the league.
No, absolutely. I think he's definitely on my shortlist for coming into my team, if not with my potential free hit move this week.
No, we'll get to that.
We will get to that. It just seems to be a Liverpool team at the moment that just, regardless of the situation, do at least get a result of some kind. I know last week probably could have had a bigger result than what they did in terms of actually getting all 3 points, but it was a weird, weird day at the Amex last weekend. But we've seen it in terms of just this injury crisis that keeps getting thrown around. And every time that people think, oh, they're finally going to lose a game, they've lost too many players, they just battle back and get a result. So are we expecting the same, especially at home at Anfield?
I think so. I think it does just show how good this Liverpool team is, that, you know, they can miss a few players here or there and still show up. As Graham was saying, how good Diogo Jota is, I think that's been a fantastic signing from Klopp. You know, there's always been that question sort of posed of, if Mane and Salah aren't scoring the goals, what's going to happen? In comes Diogo Jota and he answers the question. And I think Liverpool have just tended to have the better over Wolves in recent years. I think it was a 4-0 victory at one point last season as well. And even with some players missing, I'm not fully convinced by Wolves this season. And I think Liverpool will. I think Liverpool will get the win in this one. And as Graham said, it's a massive game for Diogo Jota, who will have that extra incentive to do well.
I always has interest in just seeing these kind of former players returning to their former teams and seeing kind of what they make of the whole situation. Because I could definitely see him having a massive part to play in this game, obviously. But it'll be interesting to see, because these players obviously know him so well. They know how to handle him, having played with him last season. So there always is that kind of question of, will they be able to nullify the threat? But to be honest, in the hot streak of form that Wolves find themselves in, or no, Wolves, sorry, Liverpool, good God, Liverpool and Jota specifically find themselves in, I think he should be all right. Taylor, looking at Wolves, I think this season it's been quite hard to put a kind of viewpoint on them. For me, it's kind of best summed up by that. They're kind of best summed up by that Gennaro Gattuso quote. Sometimes maybe good, sometimes maybe. There you go. And what do you reckon? I mean, it was another big result for them last week against Arsenal. But I mean, if they get any chance in this one, I mean, could they replicate it, or is it just an open and shut case for Liverpool?
So right, gonna start this off. So you listening? Yeah, you listening? Like you right now? You think that we're not talking to you? Yeah, you. Arsenal, not Arsenal, but Anfield. Liverpool are on a 64 game now, is it? 63, 64 game unbeaten run at Anfield.
And the league.
You've had Man City's, you've had rampant Man United's, you've had rampant.
Have you had rampant Man United's?
You know, I was trying to keep Struan happy here. From yes. It's a tough time.
You've not.
Yeah. We've had teams that looked like they were going to get a better Liverpool at one point. Liverpool fight back. Wolves are without their star man, Jimenez. I hope he gets better soon. They've lost their other star man, Jota, who looked like he could create something for them, even though they were happy to let him go. So, you know, you've got Potence, you've got Neto that could be doing this. They're still not proven, I think, this season. Just, I'm writing Wolves off for this one. Liverpool are winning. They just have, they know how to do it at home. Anfield's a fortress. Liverpool are going to win this 2-0. It's got to be a game with probably another star performance for Curtis Jones for midweek, as he was sensational. If he does play, I can see him playing and getting in, because Klopp rewards people putting in good performances. So, yeah, 2-0 win. Wolves are written off. I'm sorry, Wolves fans. You know, I know you're listening. And, yeah. And Curtis Jones is my main man.
I wouldn't rate Wolves off. I'd still think Liverpool, I'm going to be predicting Liverpool win the game. But it's, I think the two times Wolves have came to Anfield since they came back into the Premier League, they have been tight games. It was 2-0 on the last day of the season, 18-19, bit of a dead rubber for them. And then last year was the 1-0, and Pedro Neto had a goal disallowed kind of unfairly in a game that had very few chances. And that's what Wolves do.
I remember that, yeah.
Wolves do that. Wolves are a team that will limit your chances and you have to take them. Something that I've mentioned Salah and Mane haven't been doing. And you look, talk about Neto, you talk about Podence, they are both the replacements for Diogo Jota, mm-hmm. and they are now producing. Pedro Neto in particular, he's had a 13-point outing and a 6-point outing in his last two fantasy games. He is the most informed player coming into this game, and he's managed to work himself into the Portugal squad as a result of that. And they have a lot to replace, with Jimenez going out potentially forever, or at least this season.
Hopefully not.
But in Neto and Podence, and in Adama Traore, who I would quite like to see play up front in this game.
That'd be interesting. I we need to remember, this is the one man that had Jurgen Klopp scared last season.
Yeah. I'm interested to see what Wolves do, especially since they have recently changed from a back three to a back four, which is something they haven't done until now.
Yeah, it really does seem to be kind of all change at Wolves just to kind of accommodate both Podence and Neto, because I think I made the point at one point earlier this week, or last week, I can't remember exactly, but these two are the kind of golden boys of this team now, for me anyway. Nuno's got a lot of faith in these two young players, and I think he really does want to incorporate them into the team as much as he possibly can. and that has been at the expense of players like Adama Traoré, who has seen a lot of time on the bench this season, where he'd been so prolific and so important to Wolves at points throughout last season, especially after the restart, so it was a bit odd to see that happening, but it just does go to show the faith that Nuno has in these two. So it's a 2-0 Liverpool win and a Curtis Jones midfield masterclass from Taylor Murray. Graham, as a Liverpool fan in this equation, is it going to be that simple? I mean, you've answered the question already, but just in terms of a scoreline.
No, it's not really simple. It's going to be a tough game. Liverpool will find a way to win. I will go for the Liverpool standard 2-1, and I think that they will have a great performance from the captain, Jordan Henderson, who has shown his worth in the last couple of weeks since he came back from injury.
Lovely stuff. Struan?
I've gone for a 2-0 Liverpool win with Diogo Jota to be the main man.
I've gone for a 2-1 Liverpool win, and I'm going to highlight Diogo Jota as well to be involved in some aspect of the attacking returns from Liverpool this game week. I'm looking forward to this game, to be honest.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Jack. I just want our listeners to know one thing I've just seen. Since we're in the Christmas spirit, I feel like we need to. I've just seen a work van go by my window, right? And the dog was in the passenger seat wearing a Santa hat. That was tremendous viewing. Oh my god. No, I had to let you know. That is the cutest. That is a tremendous thing, and everyone should get to know that.
I've wow. never had somebody so excited about a van. About a van passionate.
No, it's the dog with the Santa hat that's on that's actually got my attention. That is the cutest, fluffy thing I've ever seen in my life.
Aye, but how much does the dog cost in FPL?
Aye, can the dog do a job?
I'm going with. Yeah, no,
how many attacking returns has the dog got this season?
Good point, in fact. No, it's a hold midfielder, I'm sorry. No, he's no good. He's not going to get you points. He's just in there to sweep up.
He's always after that ball.
He's an absolute terrier on the pitch.
He's in there to rough it up.
Oh, goodness me. Well, where even was it? I was talking about how I was like bored to this game and then Taylor goes, there's a dog. I think this will be a fairly good game, a nice way to round out Sunday's action, so looking forward to settling in potentially with a beer, I don't know, on a Sunday night potentially, and watching this one on my own because I've got no friends and I'm not allowed to have friends because of COVID. Anyway, game three, because before I get deeper into unhappy well, we're talking about the David Moyes derby, lads. West Ham versus Manchester United, Saturday night at 5:30 at the London Stadium. Fans with this one, of course, part and parcel with London somehow being available. Last result for both, it was a 2-1 win for West Ham, an interesting circumstance against Aston Villa, one they might actually feel a little bit lucky having gotten, considering all that went on in that one. And Manchester United as well got a late win away on the south coast against Southampton after James Ward-Prowse had taken the reins in the first half before Edinson Cavani came on and really left his mark on the game and announced his arrival into that Man United team. Taylor, as I mentioned, it's a David Moyes derby and the tartan Thomas Tuchel has been getting talked up for getting a new contract. Has it been deserved after this season?
Is that it?
Well,
it does speak volumes.
He's done a good job. I was a critical man of his work, and I did believe the fact that it was the wrong appointment. He has exceeded amazingly in my expectations what he's going to do. Doesn't say he's doing well. Like, I expect him to do absolutely jack. And he's succeeded my expectations massively because he's actually getting somehow back-to-back wins somewhere. I don't know how he's doing this. Maybe he's revitalised since he was isolating. I don't know, but deserved, strong word, but I'll give him credit. He has done really well. And, long may this continue, but I just feel like giving him a contract is probably rewarding some of the good work he's did, but they could go for a better manager. But as I said, that's just my opinion. I respect exactly everything he's done. He came in the club when they were struggling, kicked him up once before. They did sack him, you remember. He did get sacked, but he's back. But yeah, how do you go through getting sacked in your contract? But he has done better this time, and I'm just, jury's out for me about the new contract. That's all I'm saying.
Jury's still out. What about the kind of neutrals in this situation?
In terms of Moyes
at West Ham.
I think Moyes is very, very much underappreciated at what he's done at West Ham. I think in recent years, when he came back 2 years ago, a lot of people doubted Arnautovic's ability. You know, when he was under David Moyes, he was absolutely fantastic. He looked one of the better players in the league. He was getting tipped for big moves, ended up going to China. I don't know if you can classify that as a big move.
Big money move.
And then Pellegrini kind of came along. Obviously, this magnificent manager. He'd won the league with Man City and all sorts of other things abroad. And so it was like, yeah, okay, we'll take him. So thanks, David Moyes. You know, you kind of steadied the ship after Slaven Bilic and the loss of Payet. In came Pellegrini, spent millions on players who should have been better, the likes of Felipe Anderson, Sebastian Haller, even the likes of Chicharito should have done more than they did for the club. And Pellegrini just couldn't do anything with what, in reality, was a very good West Ham squad. In came David Moyes again to just kind of steady the ship, which is, it's just crazy that he came back. But obviously, it is a massive job, one of the biggest clubs in the Premier League. Once again, he's taken players who many doubted. You know, he's made Mikel Antonio look like one of the better forwards in the league. Just even just looking at that West Ham team on paper, I think they've got some fantastic players in there. You know, a lot of highly tipped youngsters. I think Suchek and Soufal, the two Czech internationals who have been signed, are very, very good and underrated. I think Jared Bowen, who I believe was also signed under Moyes in that January transfer window last season, he looks very exciting as well. And Pablo Fornals, who under Pellegrini looked absolutely terrible. Of course, a few of us on this show have opinions on him. But this season...
You can say Jamie McIntosh. It's his opinion.
It's his opinion, apparently. But under David Moyes this season, I think they've done really well. And I think David Moyes thrives in a situation where he can work around his team and sort of build on it and just sort of grow with the players. We saw at Everton for years, he was absolutely fantastic there. And I thought early signs of his last West Ham outing, there was signs of it, but then obviously they let go of him and brought in Pellegrini. And I think it's one of them situations where they've tried the big fancy manager, it didn't work out. I think give David Moyes the shot as long as they can, especially after staying up for relegation last season, which partly was more to do with Pellegrini. And I think the best league start West Ham have made in over a decade or something like that. So... yeah, I mean, I've probably called him every name under the sun during his time at Man United, but I think he is doing a very good job at West Ham at the moment, and I think it would be the wrong move at the moment to sack him. Not necessarily deserving of a new contract yet, but I think what he has done has been very, very good.
For me, Jack, the most important things that have happened at West Ham in the last few months on the radar are off the pitch. The first one is not out of their hands. I think they undoubtedly are the team that benefit the most from having no fans in the stadium. The amount of pressure that West Ham fans get and the hostility that must be felt and the tension in the London Stadium at points last season when they had fans can't have been easy for the players. And I think looking at their transfer business in particular, it has definitely improved in the last two windows, I would say. I think you looked at West Ham and they always seem to be a team that tried to sign big names, big players, but a lot of time it was has-beens, it was Hernandez, it was Felipe Anderson, players that had something about them, but didn't fit in a squad, they just signed them because of the, oh, he's good.
It's what
I'd probably classify as FIFA recruitment. They played good as guys in FIFA and that's who they signed.
Yarmolenko and that.
But then you look at it now, they've signed, in the last couple of windows, they've signed for now Suchek, Bowen, Benrahma, who I think has some tremendous potential. I think they get, hopefully we can talk about. Haller still has I still believe in Haller at some point. And I think Kufal is such an under-the-radar signing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Might be one of the most important signings in the Premier League. He's took that right-back position and made it his own. Mm. He was excellent for Czech Republic and Scotland, and he's been excellent for West Ham so far. And it's helped the rest of West Ham's defence. Angelo Ogbonna has been nominated for Player of the Month because he's had an excellent... He's been a player for years at West Ham. It's just kind of been meh, or he's not very great, he's not very good. Mm. And now we have a back four at West Ham with Kufal, Ogbonna, Diop and Cresswell, which is good defensively. Good set piece takers in Cresswell. And then they can change to a five with Masuaku, who is decent as well.
He's technically really good as well. He's got good
feet on him. There are options at West Ham because of what they've done off the pitch.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it really is interesting because I think West Ham, I do completely agree, the recruitment policy has been odd. I mean, you see them signing players like Patrice Evra and Pablo Zabaleta towards the back end of their careers and thinking, what are they actually going to offer to this team other than just it was a big name at one time in the league. So I do completely agree. I think Soufal has been kind of one of the most underrated or underappreciated, rather. My mum's trying to FaceTime me in the middle of a podcast. Fiona, now is not the time.
I'll FaceTime her if you want. Just send her on my way. I'll
tell her, don't ever speak about my mother on a podcast, boy.
Well, I was just going to be nice, you're patching her.
What do you mean I'm patching her? I'm in the middle of a podcast recording. I'll text her and I'll let her know that I'm in the middle of a podcast and I'll FaceTime her afterwards. But we're talking about Soufal.
We're talking about the Czech Republic players.
Fiona, now's not the time. No, I do agree. And I think it's interesting. I am still under the impression that Moyes has the ability to chuck it all away if he wants to. So, yeah. No, Jury's still out for me. I think he's done well this season. He definitely has done well this season. But we'll need to wait and see how he gets on. It might not be the best game for him in this one to be talked up for a new contract, because it's a Man United team that are scoring very freely at the same time as conceding a fair bit, as we saw from last weekend. Stuart, one thing we saw from midweek, actually, Bruno Fernandes is still hitting the heights, and he's even taken over a few managerial duties. I mean, roaring at Solskjaer to make a substitution in the Champions League game against PSG, I think it was. Something that it kind of shows kind of a bit of frustration with the manager, but also does show leadership capability. So do we see him potentially taking the captain's armband in the future during his time at the club?
I think it's a very difficult one, because I know that a lot of people want Bruno Fernandes to be the captain. You know, he's shown a lot of that. He was the captain at Sporting Lisbon. There's that clip during the Southampton game where Cavani gets the equaliser for 2-2 and sort of every other outfield player is kind of going over and celebrating, and Bruno runs to pick up the ball and he's urging them back to the halfway line, which, you know, he's only satisfied with the 3 points, which I think is a very good sign to see. But at the same time, I can't really see why Harry Maguire should lose it or when he's going to lose it anytime soon. You know, I think he's still got a long career ahead of him at Man United. But I think Bruno's almost one of those, you know, he's a captain without an armband. You know, he doesn't need it on. You can see that he's a leader in that team. And I think it's just a positive sign. You can see his frustrations coming out as well, you know, screaming at the manager to make a substitution. I'm not sure which substitution he wanted at that point, but, you know, he's not the type of person to want himself to come off either, so... I think there is a real leader there. I think there's also that point of, you know, he obviously was a very good signing, but, you know, he's only been at the club for coming up to a year in January, and, you know, people have been tipping him to be the captain for months now, which I think is credit to just how well he's adapted to the culture and just come into the club, basically. And a lot of people have said it's a very similar impact to that of Cantona and just sort of coming in and helping the team drastically.
How are the other two boys? How are you two, Taylor and Graham, kind of seeing Man United at the moment? I mean, where are your thoughts with this club and just the way that Manchester United's season's been going, I suppose?
They are a Jekyll and Hyde side. I expect them to win only after they lose, which is strange considering the fact they've never won, actually sneakily won 3 games in a row. But then with a game in hand, would only be 2 points behind if they won that game from top spot. They have the quality in the players. Not sure they have the manager still. It's just, they are a really interesting team to follow. They're kind of a car crash, but a car crash that... It's like a crash on a Ferrari. It's still a nice car.
It's just missing a wheel at the moment. Mm-hmm. Can't quite drive in a straight line. It's still waving all over the place. It just needs that extra wheel to get it going.
A five-wheel car, Strid.
Actually, it's missing a wheel, so it's 3.
Oh, missing a wheel, well...
All is at the wheel.
and then Bruno Fernandes, mainly, they have the best player in the Premier League right now, I think.
Oh, right, okay.
Oh, him or Harry Kane, the other two men, like, they are the two best players in the league. Fernandes changed Man U's season last year, and that's continued this season.
I'd agree.
You look at it on form, Bruno Fernandes is the most on form player in the entire Premier League right now.
Yeah. That makes perfect sense. I like the analogy of Jekyll and Hyde side, because it really is just that. Like, you're getting one version of United or you're getting another, and you don't really know until the day and the first whistle blows and the game kicks off. You really do not know what Man United you're going to get, which is quite scary. It's quite scary if you're a United fan, because it really just could go tits up on a match day and you've got no real kind of prior warning for it, so you just kind of strap in and hopefully expect the unexpected. But there's no way to tell from what I can see anyway. How do we feel coming into this one, though? Because it's a West Ham side that are doing well and a United side that no one can really seem to pin down as to how well they're actually doing. So, Sue, and as a United fan in this situation, how do you feel coming into this one?
I'm not quite sure. This isn't slagging off United. This is more praising West Ham. I think West Ham are one of the form teams in the Premier League at the moment, and I think they have been really good in the big games this season so far. So I could easily see them coming away with a victory. But at the same time, you know, I don't think the United season has been too bad. I think inconsistency, once again, has been the main problem. But as Graham said, you know, with the game in hand, United can go level with just about every team in the league except Liverpool and Tottenham, who would be 2 points ahead at that point as well. So it's not too far away. But I think it's just the same issues of inconsistency in that, you know, the example of beating Leipzig 5-0 and then getting beaten by Arsenal, which at the time, you know, you were praising Arsenal, but looking at Arsenal's form now, you kind of wonder, you know, how did they beat United? And then losing to Istanbul Basaksehir. So I think it could be one of them. I don't actually think the performance against PSG was as bad. I don't really think the criticism of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has been fair, and we know my opinion on Solskjaer from many rants. I think there's other people in that game to blame over than him. And I don't think it's one of those kind of defeats where it's gonna have a huge impact on the players, because I think it was a good performance at the end of the day. You know, it is PSG. You know, the front line cost $361 million between two players. So I think in all honesty, you would probably expect a poor result against PSG at some point in the group stage. And I think one of the best things about that Southampton result was United falling 2-0 down. If that was United of last season, the season prior, most of the time under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, you just think, oh, you know, that's the game thrown away. You know, your classic, just think of somebody like Paul Pogba, who would be walking back to the halfway line, who often receives a lot of criticism. But to come back, I think, you know, we talked about Bruno Fernandes a lot. I think he is one of the main reasons why there was still that hunger and drive, and a few other of the new additions like Donny van de Beek and Edison Cavani, of course, I think kind of showed that this team does have what it takes, and on its day, it probably could beat anybody in the league. It is just about finding that consistency. But I would still say, you know, West Ham could get something out of this. I've gone for a draw, because I think it'd be a bit harsh on West Ham to say, oh, United will win and stuff like that, because I do think West Ham have just as good a chance as anyone, to be honest, to win this game. I say as anyone, there's only two teams that have a chance of winning this game, but I wouldn't exactly say that there is a clear favourite.
Taylor, how about you? How do you feel coming into this one?
I was going to tip a very close game and potentially West Ham, you know, getting something like this, but David Moyes has confirmed that Mike Antonio won't be available, so that's drastically changed my consideration. So I've went with a 3-1, Man United win.
Oh, wow.
I was going to go with like a quite entertaining 2-each game, because Man United's defence isn't the greatest, and West Ham, but feel like as much praise has been getting, I feel like Man United have too much to for them to handle, so I was going to go with like 2-each, but I'm going with 3-1 now since Antonio's out, and I can reduce it to a firepower massively.
I will say one thing: that Marcus Rashford is a very big doubt for this game with a shoulder injury. He didn't train properly today, so I think the only role he'll have is off the bench on the weekend.
I mean, I'd agree that Antonio's been a miss, but like at the same time, West Ham have still been doing all right without him, like, which we didn't really expect considering how well Antonio had been playing, especially in the restart and before he got injured. So, I mean, I don't know if I necessarily agree that it's going to be like a real detriment to West Ham's chances. I mean, Haller has really stepped up in terms of goal scoring and playing that same kind of physical striker role that Antonio's been playing. I don't know. I think it's a good point about Antonio missing out, but I'm not sure if he definitely would guarantee a West Ham win when there wouldn't have been one in the first place, I suppose.
No, I would. I've tried to speak, my mic was muted. I would 100% probably agree with that. Maybe I'm over exaggerating exactly how much importance Michael Antonio is, but I'm just not confident in Haller. I feel like West Ham don't play his strengths, and
right.
I would actually be more comfortable knowing that Antonio was leading the line other than him. But in the same sense, they have been doing well, and they've had most of the success without Michael Antonio. So, it is a tough one, but I'm just going to go with Man United and just say that they probably do have too much and can see them stifling West Ham.
Fair enough. Graham, what about you? How do you see this one panning out?
I think I'll take a draw as well. I think it's going to be a close game. I I think that Fernandes will be Manu's key man. I think Rashford is quite a big miss. Fernandes will keep Manu in the game, and but West Ham will look good at the moment, and I will go for a 1-1. Key man to be Angelo Bonner, who's been on fire.
It has been, you're right. I've gone for a draw as well. I've gone 2-2, because while they're both quite good attacking teams, they're still a wee bit questionable at the back. And I had Antonio Dinn as my key man because I thought he was going to be back, but Moyes' comments have changed that completely. I think Thomas Suchek will be a big player for West Ham this weekend, as he has been throughout the season. Now that brings an end to the premium picks of this week's episode. We're now going to come on to our wildcard options for this week. This is another three games that we don't have as much to say about, but we still felt like they were worth a mention in the show. We're coming to a South Coast derby as Brighton take on Southampton over this weekend. Brighton have been up and down. Southampton have got a fairly poor away record in the Premier League so far. Struan, how do we see this game going?
I think I'd go for a Southampton victory, to be honest.
Fair enough.
Yeah, fair enough. Move on then.
Sorry, Mike cut out there. sorry, no, I did.
I like that. Southampton win. Next question. Back off.
It's one of the smaller games, isn't it? Easy pick. No, I think Southampton are a very, very good team, to be honest, this season. Very enjoyable to watch. You know, Graham and Jack, you both sung the praises quite often. And
I like that we keep people keep bringing that up, how much me and Jack love Southampton. Let's just keep doing that. That's like our 9-0.
The Ramble 9-0 is me and Graham loving Southampton.
People mentioned Southampton won 9-0, and now the Ramble mentioned that Jack and Graham absolutely love Southampton before the start of the season, and they're being proved right.
I think Hasenhüttl's a great manager. I'm still not fully convinced Brighton are very good at the moment, to be honest. I think they lack.
Not convinced Brighton are very good, full stop, to be honest.
Yeah, to be honest, yeah. I think Southampton are a very, very good side. I think James Ward-Prowse is one of the most underrated players in the Premier League. And I'd fancy a Southampton victory this season, and I hope they do well because
Junior, 20 years old,
so it's allowed. But yeah, I think Southampton will win this game. It should be quite an interesting game, to be honest. It's not really got the kind of flair of other ones, but it should be quite entertaining. You know, two pretty newish managers to the league, South Coast teams. Yeah, good game.
When you have the best dead ball specialist in the league, that is worth points. And that's what James Ward-Prowse.
Yeah, true. I think Danny Ings is still injured, though.
Yes. Yeah, but then that they're still alive because of Ward-Prowse. He's still very in because of his 35 kick ability.
Do you know what? I'm still quite annoyed that Salisu hasn't played, given how much I've spoken about him.
You and love Salisu.
One of the reasons that Ones to Watch article hasn't come out is because there's about three players in it who are barely featured this season, so it's going to look very daft.
That article's one to watch at this point because it's not going to get out.
Oh, it's coming. Don't worry. But you know, Danny Welbeck would be a random shout for fantasy in this game because genuinely I don't think Mopai or Connolly have been up to it this season.
Mopai's definitely not been.
I think Welbeck's kind of got that experience and, you know, he's Premier League proven. And I think he will start this game. So yeah, if you want a Premier League shout from a fantasy shout from each of them, it's Ward-Prowse or Danny Welbeck.
Ward-Prowse or Danny Welbeck. I like those shouts. Nice, isn't it? Soon going for the English boys this episode, so we'll see how that pans out. I do agree, Southampton win for me, not really much else to say about it. We're going to come on to the second of our wildcard options, which has given me another opportunity to talk about Chelsea, because I'm just very selfish like that. Like all the other London clubs, Chelsea are going to have fans back in this game. Leeds are coming off the back of a big victory against Everton. And it's a homecoming for Big Paddy B, Big Patrick Bamford, coming back to Stamford Bridge, where he came through the academy and was a victim of the classic Chelsea youth player getting shipped off to somewhere else for minutes and then just get wholeheartedly sold. Who'll ask about this one? I'll ask Taylor about this one because I want to come on to Graham for fantasy chat about the City game. Taylor, how do we see this game going? I mean, Chelsea haven't lost since the Carabao Cup knockout to Spurs in all competitions, and Leeds still do have like game in them. They've got big results in them. So how do we see this one going?
I see this one going Chelsea. Why did I stop? I don't know.
I thought you were singing the song that just only says the word Chelsea.
Right, Composure, right. No, Chelsea, big performance during the week, by the way. I don't think that can be underestimated. I'm pretty sure I speak to Jack about this, and I said on Energy Extra Time that that was a massive game, and it shouldn't be underestimated how big that was when 4-0 away. And I feel like Oliver Giroud has made himself undroppable for the weekend.
Who?
Oliver Giroud.
Please, sir, may I have some more?
That would be...
That's what he's saying to Lampard for minutes.
For the people who know that Olivier Giroud... Olivier. Oliver.
I'm sorry, I'm not cultured. I'm sorry.
I want to find more French names that can just turn to English.
Taylor, what was the name of that right back that used to play for Arsenal that was French?
Sagna.
Did you do that on purpose? Did you?
I did that on purpose.
I had to ask. We made a point about Giroud. Graham had some interesting comments to make about Giroud in the group chat on that night.
Oh, let's do it. I said this on Extra Time yesterday. That was a full cap suggestion when I mentioned that Giroud was about Werner, and then Giroud went and scored 3 more goals, and I was like, ha ha, get to me.
Oh, the agenda was fed nicely.
But I genuinely believe he's made himself undroppable. And now, you know what? I'm going to drop it. I put Giroud in for this weekend with my free hit. Yeah, it's happening. Giroud's got to bang in more goals this weekend.
That's good news for me. That's very good news for me.
When it happens, you'll be sitting stunned.
To be fair, I will. I will be stunned, to be honest. I don't know. I'm still kind of confident about Chelsea win. There's not really much to say that I wouldn't be in this game. It's home game, fans are back. I mean, I've already kind of said that's not going to matter much, but who knows. Chelsea are just looking fairly comfortable in everything that they're doing just now. That Sevilla game, I said to Jamie, because we were with Jamie on Wednesday, and he was asking me, what do you make of tonight? And I said, I'd take a draw, to be honest, and then just kind of let things play out against Krasnodar at home in the last match week of the group stages. But then going away to Sevilla when we couldn't beat them at home, we got a 0-0 draw at home, and scoring 4 goals, it really just kind of is an indication of how Chelsea have come kind of from this point last season, where they were really kind of struggling to get any sorts of results like that. So I've been massively impressed recently. I don't really think there's going to be much else that stops Chelsea, but it is the kind of point where I think things are just going to get too good, and then something will come along and just bring it back down to earth. And considering how Leeds have played in the last 2 games against Everton and Arsenal, I've got a slight fear that this could be the game that just kind of topples Chelsea's kind of decent run. But hopefully not. Hopefully it's a fairly entertaining game anyway.
But has Bielsa been spying again?
Has Bielsa and Lampard again, of course. That Spygate returns. I think. Probably more security and preparation for this when Lampard had the entire Cobham training centre on lockdown. No one is allowed to go in or out, apart from, obviously, away to Spain. Graham, we'll come on to you for the final of our wildcard options, which is City and Fulham. And it's an interesting one that I've picked, because a lot of people are thinking, well, City and Fulham is surely just a whitewash for City. But it could be the first opportunity over the winter period that we see a bit of Pep Guardiola roulette.
I think what we do here, Jack, is that we can now group this together with the fantasy team of the week, because...
Yeah, good idea, yeah.
It looks like we have 3 people in this podcast today that are playing 3 hits, and a Man City at home to Fulham could be very important with that.
Absolutely.
So we can come back to the position. We'll start off with City, and who should you pick from City? I don't have a fucking clue. They did rest players against Porto, I think, on Tuesday. I'm not sure they played a full strength team. I'm not sure if De Bruyne played. I was watching my own team, so I could be looking like a fool.
Let me just go and grab that line up quickly while I keep going.
Which would suggest that maybe Manchester City will play more of a full strength team here, because they have nothing to play for on Tuesday. But I do not know. We never know with Manchester City.
No. It was a switched up team. It was Ederson started, then Cancelo, Diaz, Garcia, Zinchenko, Fernandinho, Rodri, Foden, Silva, Torres, Sterling as a front 3.
So this week, we are talking about 3 hit this week. So Mahrez did not start and De Bruyne did not start. They will now start to...
Nor did Kyle Walker.
Those 3 will start. So if you're looking at getting City players in...
Walker and De Bruyne, absolutely. Mahrez is still up in the air.
Mahrez did a hat-trick. Maris had a hat trick, De Bruyne had two assists, and Kyle Walker had a clean sheet last week. There's three Man City players for you for next week. If you're not a free hit, avoid Man City players altogether. You can't trust them. You can't trust them long term in your team unless it's De Bruyne.
Unless you've got them in already, realistically.
Yeah, unless you've got them in already, or you're picking the best ones, but they come out at a premium price.
They do.
So that is what I would say for Man City. They will win. As you can probably read through the tier list from what I've said, they should win this game comfortably. It should be similar to last week's 5-0 demolition to Burnley, although I do have a stronger opinion of Fulham than most.
You do. You've been speaking Fulham up a little bit.
I think they are shit defensively. But I think they have a little bit about them going forward. They have some exciting players. I think Lookman, people may have mentioned his penalty, but he's actually made that team more creative. I think Anguissi, Andre Frank Zambo Anguissi,
nice fun name,
is a good player. He's a good box-to-box player that I think Fulham signed the last time in the Premier League, and they just didn't give him enough of chances. I think he is quite important for them.
What a cultured lad you are. That was a tremendous pronunciation, by the way.
That was good.
But Man City will be too strong, so I would pick. So if you play a free hit, it's De Bruyne, Mahrez, Walker, all fantastic options. If you're not of a free hit, avoid if you
avoid
don't
like the plague. We'll come on to that locked in 11 right now, which is the kind of best 11 that we can suggest, or the best group of players from games we've mentioned, games we've not, to make sure that you get maximum points in fantasy football this weekend. We always lump in goalkeepers and defenders together because they get clean sheet points. So, aside from Kyle Walker, who we've already kind of agreed on, if you're playing free hit, Walker's the way to go. Who else are we suggesting, troops?
James Justin, Ben Chilwell, Reece James.
Two Chelsea defenders?
Yeah, I've had Chilwell and James in quite well. Chelsea just seem to be dominating pretty much possession in just about every game, though not needing to be too and too much, and both of them have definitely got assists in them. James Justin and Leicester play Sheffield United, so surely that's a clean sheet and bonus of an assist. My two keepers are Lloris and Meslier. And for the past 2 weeks, Meslier on the bench has outperformed Lloris. However, now, because he's coming up against Chelsea and Lloris has got Arsenal, I'm going to put Lloris in this one. I've also got Tierney, but he's on the bench as well.
Fair. Taylor, how about you? Who's in between your sticks? Who's making sure you're not conceding anything?
I've hit my free hit this week. Get it? I've hit my free hit. Hey!
That was terrible. Okay, you've hit your free hit. You're 0-2 with jokes today, man.
Right, okay. Anyway, moving on from that
disappointment. You sounded so upset.
No, it's all good, So, in between the sticks, the man with the safe hands, Mendy. I've brought him in because I was going to bring Ederson in because I know he's guaranteed to start, but knowing my luck...
Lookman's getting a goal.
Knowing my luck, Lookman scored
that penalty at last.
No, Guardiola would just actually whip him out and put somebody else in. Like, known my luck. I've put
Scott Carson back. Gets a game.
Not Zach Steffen comes in.
His first appearance in like 5 years, just to make sure his contract's actually upheld. I play three at the back at standard with this year. I've went with Justin since he played Sheffield United. Big up all McBurney because he will score now. So, yeah. Walker, I've went with him because Graham pointed out the facts. And my left field pick, I've went with the one and only Kyle Bartley.
But
I don't dislike it, Angus. That's a cheap option.
It's interesting.
West Brom are good defenders.
Yeah, they are playing Crystal Palace, who aren't goal scorers either.
Interesting. Well, Crystal Palace do have Zaha back this week, though.
They do have Zaha back, but...
Jack, I've got you quivering.
You don't, because it's Kyle Bartley.
Yeah, but I'm pulling away from you now. Even further than I'm already.
Ah, well, I've not told you who I'm putting in my free hit, though.
Oh, we've all took Graham. Let's go. Surprise. Surprise. Let's go. I didn't realise I was up at 2-5.
Right.
And it's getting Bryn from Gavin and Stacey, I suppose.
Graham, before Taylor's ego gets any bigger, do you want to talk me through what your free hit plans are for your backline?
Okay, yes. I mentioned Eric Dyer. I'm actually still undecided on the keeper. I think it's quite tough. I've thought about going cheap, somebody like Sam Johnson, maybe Alex McCarthy, somebody that are playing teams that don't score lots of goals, but I'm not undecided. I'm undecided on that. I think I'll probably go Kyle Walker in defence. I think I'll probably go Eric Dyer in defence. And I'm just looking for two more. I'm maybe thinking, I'm not sure Everton's goals have dried up. I think they're looking at Dean being out, basically takes away Everton's plan A of Rodriguez to Digne to Calvert-Lewin to goal. So I've been maybe thinking about putting Burnley players
in. There's a big French centre-half in West London who's been keeping a few clean sheets recently.
That's not a bad shout. Kurt Zouma's not a bad shout at all either, and he's 5.5. I thought Leeds were excellent last week against Everton, and they should have scored about 8 or 9 goals, to be honest with you. So I'd be a bit hesitant, but it's a good chance to put a Chelsea player in. And then my fifth and final player, I'd probably maybe keep in Andy Robbo. Liverpool's fullbacks are always good for attacking returns, even if they don't keep clean sheets. So Robbo, Dyer, Walker, Kurt Zouma and Sam Johnson. That is quite
a announce Tsimikas coming in for an appearance now. Tsimikas, oh my. I hate this podcast today.
You have to tell you're so Brexit, man, honestly. So you're investing in your defence, you're not considering just dropping like a tiny wee amount of money on a stinker just to spread your money.
I'll probably go back and look at it after.
Aye.
But I was thinking about dropping a bit in the defence.
Right. I would say I've kind of got a provisional free hit, sorry, that I've put together. And the back line I have just now, I brought Schmeichel in. Mm-hmm. Leicester playing
The Blades,
as mentioned. James Justin and Reece James both stay in defence because I think they're kind of fairly in line to be good defensively this weekend. Kyle Walker comes in, also Kyle Walker-Peters because Brighton have not been scoring. And Southampton, no one knows it, Graham, but I love Southampton, clearly.
I do too.
And then that left one, and I brought in Nico Williams from Liverpool at 3.9 million.
Not a bad shout.
To sit in my bench.
Because I hope Trent doesn't come back.
Yeah, well, quite possibly. No, but I think you're kind of best look for clean sheets this weekend. Leicester, whoever's playing Burnley. City, Chelsea, because they just keep clean sheets now. It's just a thing which I never thought I'd be able to say, but here we are. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that kind of wraps up defence. Up into midfield, I've got 5 changes from what my midfield was last week.
Who are you, Pep Guardiola?
Let's hear them then.
Bruno Fernandes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Kufal's the right back. Thomas Souček. Just because 4.9 million, and I don't necessarily know if he'll start or if I'll start him. I'm undecided. Hakim Ziyech, Kevin De Bruyne, and Diogo Jota.
I like it.
Thank you. Would you like to offer yours?
I have not put together a provisional one. That is what my plan is after the podcast. I'm looking at Fernandes, Mahrez, Jota, Ward-Prowse, and potentially Jared Bowen, which I think is very expensive and might not work, but we'll see how it goes.
No, I like the shouts. I do like the WordPress and the Bowen shouts. They're very good. I did consider them as well, but I just wasn't entirely convinced by. I might shift some stuff around. I've put a couple of premium strikers in as well, so there could be room for a reshape. Struan, as a man not playing a free hit this week.
I've kept Diogo Jota in. Unfortunately, I still have to have Aubameyang, as I was going to transfer him out, but due to Aston Villa's game with Newcastle being cancelled, it was Jack Grealish who had to make way. And after all that talk about Man City, I'd already brought in Ferran Torres, who was not mentioned, unfortunately. Ooh. But I think he potentially could play up front. I kind of regret it now and wish I'd taken Mahrez. But
do you not think Gabi Jesus will start because of midweek? He didn't play.
Yeah, I think he could do, but I think Ferran Torres could be involved in sort of anywhere across that front three.
Yeah, fair.
But I'm kind of regretting it now, thinking Riyad Mahrez probably will, especially after the hat-trick last week. But to be fair, I think Ferran Torres might even be better than Jesus anyway. But yeah, Torres, Aubameyang and Diogo Jota, with Curtis Jones on my bench, who I'm very tempted to bring in.
Yeah, good shout.
I think he's a very, very good player.
Taylor, how about yourself?
So I'm going to make a point in Struan. I usually have Ferran Torres in, and that was... I'm brave of you, but thank you for letting me catch up with you with that now, thank you. And remember, Guardiola doesn't care about records. We all know about the De Bruyne. So, yeah. And Jack, also, to you, get out of my head, please, because you've just took 4 of my 5 midfielders. Please. You've took Fernandes, or Fernange, as you say.
Hi, Derek May, thanks for listening.
Kevin De Bruyne.
I forgot I did that one as well.
Harvey Barnes is my only Barnes one that you didn't put in. Yeah, I feel like he needs to start after coming on scoring.
With an equaliser.
Diogo Jota. I'm just saying Derek hasn't done yet, so yeah, Derek Jota and...
Derek Ziyech. Jota. Derek Jota!
No! Oh, Diogo, sorry. Diogo.
Diogo.
Diogo. Diego, Derek, you know, whatever one he's comfortable with.
So Brexit.
I like Derek a lot.
Derek, daughter.
That's because I was thinking of Derek Ray. Oh, that's a bit of shambles to me. As always, love it.
And Ziyech, you missed
Ziyech. Yeah, and Ziyech. I was actually tossed up behind him or Havertz because Havertz played during the week, but I don't know. I can see Havertz probably playing, but Ziyech has had some tremendous performances in the last couple of weeks.
True.
And I've just bottled it because I've dropped my bottle and I can't find it.
Classic. Right, strikers then. I've changed all three of my strikers, so this will be the first week that Timo Werner is not my team, from what my professional squad is looking like. But I will leave that up to the mystery of going last. But I'll start with asking Struan who his strikers are.
Dominic Calvert-Lewin, Timo Werner, who is once again the captain, and Harold Kane, because I don't think I would have captained him because obviously he's very good against Arsenal. But that fear of him being injured, I've put the armband on Werner instead.
Kane and Tierney though.
No, Tierney's on my bench.
Oh, Tierney's all right. Okay.
Yeah, I've got Kane and Aubameyang, and I've got Lloris and Aubameyang, which is obviously a bit of an issue, but
more chance of Spurs' defence holding solid than Arsenal's.
Yeah, as I said, you know, I'm genuinely tempted to put Curtis Jones in over Aubameyang for this game week because I fully believe Curtis Jones will do better than Aubameyang will
if he plays.
Yeah, true. I think he has a good chance. I think scoring. I'm kind of hoping Graham comes in here. Does Jones have a good chance?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. There we go.
Liverpool don't have a midfielder, so unless they put Fabinho back forward one, Jones will probably start, especially based on how he played.
I like Jones. Yeah. So I am quite tempted. Although part of me now wants to pull Torres from the lineup. But I think there's a better chance of Torres coming on against Fulham and doing something than there is just having Aubameyang against Spurs.
I like these bold predictions about Aubameyang and things. I like hearing these. This is good. Taylor, how's your striking force looking ahead of this weekend?
Since I'm going with the 3-5-2, I've decided to go with two out there picks for my strikers. You know, one is that if they don't work out, Graham and Jack overtake me and I go back to being sad instead of my ego, you know, taking a massive inflation.
That's a lot.
Or I catch up with McIntosh and Garth and Boyd and my ego inflates even more and I come back on and I big it up again. But I've went with Oliver Giroud. Yes, not Oliver. I've went with Big Oliver. And
Are you just sticking to completely butchering these pronunciations or are you like doing it?
I started off, I may as well continue it. And I've went with the baby Jesus.
The baby Jesus?
Yep. And because I feel like if you're ever going to score a goal in your Man City career, it's got to be against Fulham. It's got to have been. And if you don't, fists are going through the walls.
Good.
That is all.
Right. Graham.
Taylor's
please, rattled please save
my
this.
Taylor's rattled my brain. What the hell, man?
I can't even speak. My words are escaping me now.
I think I'll stick with Dom, Big Dom Calvert-Lewin. I think I might go with Trey Adams, who I'm a big fan of.
Shout.
And I think I might go with Tammy, to be honest with you.
Trey Adams? That could be interesting.
He was rested on Wednesday, so I'm assuming he'll start this game.
Mm.
Now and then against Spurs last week, but 9 points, 8 points, 5 games in these 3 games prior to that. Looks a different player right now.
Yep.
So it's a cheap option. I might go for Tammy.
That's a good shout. I like that. I like that a lot.
But I'll probably play a 4-4-2 and just put three absolute diddies. It's a free hit. There's no point in having good subs.
I'm interested to see what Chelsea do this weekend, to be honest. I didn't speak about it when we were speaking about the game, which is probably stupid of me. But Lampard has a full-strength team for the first time this season. He has absolutely everyone at his disposal, even wee Billy, who... If he makes a bench, I'll be happy.
He's coming on in performance for Rose Royce.
I don't know if Lampard might take this opportunity to play Werner through the middle and play Pulisic and Ziyech. It could be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what Team Chelsea come out with. But I do not have Timo Werner in my team. The Werner brothers are without their captain. We are bringing in Dom Calvert-Lewin for the first time this season. And I had enough money to make sure that I could have Jamie Vardy against Sheffield United, because a former Sheffield Wednesday man, Jamie Vardy, would absolutely love to score a goal against the Blades as he did last season, and he's a he's a big enough shithouse to do so.
I was going to say the shithouse celebrations, even with no fans in the stadium, will be coming up. Actually, no, will there be fans in that stadium?
Don't think
you know, he can go to each one individually and celebrate.
Yeah, there you go. That's what's going to happen. He's just going to jump into the crowd and run up and down the stairs. And then I had Keenan Davis for the bench just so I could move money around elsewhere. But that's going to bring this episode of the Fantasy Ramble to an end. Thank you very much to everyone for listening. Make sure to subscribe to the Ramble wherever you get your podcasts to make sure that new episodes show up automatically in your feed. And follow us over on Twitter at Fantasy Ramble to see all of our hosts' predictions for this game week's fixtures. Thank you very much to Struan Taylor and Graham Sinclair for joining me today. Make sure to check out the Football Roundup on Monday and Extra Time next Thursday before we return on Friday as usual. Until then, my name is Jack Donnelly. This has been the Fantasy Ramble by Energy Sport. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you next time.